I believe that was the first time Stephen Ulm has spoken more quickly than I do. Very impressive, Steve. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you to Marlene Beckman from NIJ for the opportunity to be here today, and also for providing us with funding to make this evaluation possible. It's been a thrill to be involved with the evaluation of HOPE since, well, I guess, 2006. Nonviolent drug offenders are rarely given jail time. I think many people, when they don't know much about the criminal justice system, assume guys are picked up with a couple of joints in their pockets and they're sent away to prison forever. It doesn't usually work that way. Most people are put on probation or parole for some kind of drug violation, which makes the probation and parole departments extremely important in the fight against drug use. They have this captive audience under their supervision that they're supervising that can help us affect these decisions about using drugs. Unfortunately, our parole agents and our probation agents have very high caseloads and very limited resources with which to work. The accent, by the way, is South African. Very high caseloads, very limited drug treatment resources. We've seen this across the country. And many of the offenders that we are supervising have very serious drug addictions and need good quality care. A big issue, though, is that these are often considered small fish. They're nonviolent drug offenders, so given all the problems we have, who really cares? Well, the small fish grow up to big fish if they're left unchecked. I've studied hundreds of thousands of nonviolent drug offenders. Those, and I kept an eye on those who came in with their first nonviolent drug violation with no priors whatsoever. Within 2 years, 15% of those individuals had transitioned to high-cost offenders. That is, multiple property violations or crimes against people. So small fish eventually do become big fish. How HOPE is different from drug courts. One of the problems we have when we talk about HOPE around the country is everybody says, well, we're doing it already, we have drug courts. And some of you might be thinking the same thing. HOPE is very different from drug courts in the following way. The role of the judge is different. In drug courts, the offenders come before the judge on a regular basis. It could be every couple of weeks, once a month, depending on the program. Under HOPE, they only come before the judge if they've violated. You don't see the judge again if you're managing to sort yourself out on your own. The role of treatment is also very different. Under drug courts, everybody is mandated to treatment while they're being supervised under a drug court. Under HOPE, you only go to treatment if you either ask for it or you've demonstrated through your dirty urines that you're unable to desist from drug use on your own. The result of these two effects, the difference in the use of the drugs, the differences in the use of treatment, means that a program like HOPE can scale very differently to how a drug court can scale. There's a limit to how many offenders the drug court system will ever be able to supervise. At the moment, drug courts supervise about 70,000 offenders, drug offenders. Just to give you an example, in California every year alone, we sentence about 70,000 individuals on nonviolent drug charges. So we have a real problem with scale here. How HOPE is different from a diversion program. Many of you would be familiar with Arizona moved first with treatment diversion with Proposition 200. California followed with Proposition 36. How those are different from a HOPE-style program is the role of sanctions. Under diversion programs, they're very scared of using sanctions. California doesn't allow them. We don't allow jail sanctions in Proposition 36. The role of treatment is also different. They're typically mandated to treatment. Again, HOPE does not mandate treatment. And how the treatment decisions are made are very different. Under a diversion program, we do what is called assess and treat. We assess you, which is based on self-reported behavior, and then we send you off to a treatment program. Under HOPE, treatment decisions are based on observed behavior by the offenders. And why this is a very important distinction is because, this might not come as a surprise, offenders lie. I've just finished a study of offender behavior and what they say about their drug use versus what they really do. 50% of the lads, they were all lads, 50% of the lads that I interviewed said that in order to avoid a referral to jail and to get into treatment instead, 50% of them had lied. They had overreported their drug use to avoid jail and get a referral to treatment. 60% of them had said that they had underreported their drug use during an assessment to get to a lower level of treatment supervision. You can do the numbers yourself. That is not very credible sources of information from the criminal justice-involved drug offending population. So given we have such little information on what's really going on with them, using observed behavior is a very strong indicator of what their true needs are. So we think of HOPE as a behavioral triage model. We watch how they how they behave, and then we triage them into groups depending on their behavior. If they're testing dirty, we know this person has a serious problem. Even when faced with the credible threat of sanctions, if they're still testing dirty, let's get them into high-quality treatment and quickly, a very strong indicator of need. Well, how does HOPE do as a behavioral triage model? Is this the model of our dreams? We were looking for a model that would do this kind of thing. How did HOPE perform? Well, we're very happy to say that with the exception of a handful of cases, I recorded under five, sanctions were certain. Every time they violated, they were sanctioned under HOPE, which is incredible. The reason swift and certain sanctions programs have failed elsewhere in the country is that the judges were not willing to follow through. They did not credibly and consistently give those sanctions under HOPE. It did happen. The sanctions are swift. 70% of the hearings are held within 72 hours. Moving the system that quickly is also very unusual. It's an incredible feat on the part of the Hawaiians. These hearings are quick. We recorded all of the court cases. We transcribed all of those court records. The average HOPE hearing, the motion to modify hearing, is about 7.5 minutes. So this is a very quick turnaround time in the court. The warning hearings are also quick because they're typically done en masse. The typical warning hearing is about 14 minutes, but we're serving many, many offenders at the same time. The sanctions are parsimonious, and we had some issues here because we have a naughty judge, and judges are often naughty. The average first violation – do we have any judges in the room? Too late, other than this good, well-behaved judge over here. The first violation on average was 6 days. That it included my naughty judge. The second violation was 14 days. And then on average, the third violation was 48 days. That included my naughty judge who insisted on sending everybody away for a long time. And the point of this program was swift and certain but modest sanctions. Without that naughty judge, the average third violation stay was 26 days in jail. The study setting. The study was done men and women over the age of 18 under the supervision in what was called the Integrated Community Sanctions Unit in Honolulu. The average age of our offenders was 37 years old. 18% of them were female. And just to make sure you know that we're not dealing with the tiny fish here, the average number of prior arrests was 17. The median number was 13. So these guys had been around the block before. They all scored very high on LSI scores and had horrible recent behavior on probation. Just to give you a sense of drug of choice, the primary drug for these guys was methamphetamine. I'd separated it out into two groups, admissions of drug use versus positive UAs. What's interesting about the HOPE offenders, they come in and they say, I used. They don't even want to be tested because they know that the judges will be more lenient if they come in and self-declare. The probation officers in the study, the Marlene study at NIJ, was the Integrated Community Sanctions Unit. They were a very special unit that dealt with the highest of the high-risk offenders. They had an average caseload of about 87 clients, and the POs had just over 4 years of experience as probation officers. At the same time, thanks to Marlene, we were able to set up a randomized control trial of this program that was funded by the Smith Richardson Foundation. Those POs have a more typical caseload of 176 probationers in their caseloads. The probation officers, if there's any in the room, please raise your hand. If you're from Hawaii, those POs are incredible. They are well-trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, motivation interviewing skills. They're also given training on how HOPE works, how to fill in the blanks, how to interact with the courts, etc., to move the program forward. We had a control group for the randomized control trial and a comparison group for the other unit, and they were subject to probation as usual. Now, just keep this in mind as I explain the differences in outcomes. Probation, as usual, involved no random testing whatsoever. They had scheduled appointments with their POs, typically once a month. Not every month, but most months, they'd then be given a UA. They knew a month in advance when they would be tested. They knew a month in advance when they'd have to pee in a cup. The HOPE probationers, by contrast, were randomly tested, you heard. During the first 2 months, they'd be tested 6 times a month, often multiple times, multiple days in a row. So they had no advance notice of when they'd be taking their urines. We had 5 aims with the study. The first was to look at differences between HOPE and probation as usual on drug use. The second was on attending appointments, as in rates of missing. We looked at jail days served, prison sentences, and on revocation rates. The big ones, the last two turn out to be the big two. Differences in revocation and differences in prison, if you're interested in cost, and I'm an economist, dominate everything else. If you've saved prison days, you've saved the system because of the high cost of incarceration. Here are our findings. In urine analysis, just a reminder again, HOPE was tested randomly, comparison group was not. We see, you know, this is funny. When I was first invited to do this evaluation, I'd seen similar numbers by the AG's office, and I didn't believe them. And then separately and independently, we did the same analysis and came within a few percentage points of each other. For the HOPE group, we found over the first 3 months in their follow-up, there was an 83% reduction in their drug use. Over 6 months, there was a 93% reduction. Notice the baseline values for HOPE and the comparison group were slightly different. The HOPE offenders were a tougher crowd. Now, based on our models, we can show that the best predictor of your follow-up drug use is your prior drug use. So this should have been a relatively strong bias against HOPE. If anything, we would have seen them doing better, worse than the comparison group, and if anything, they've shown impressive improvements over time. For lack of time, I now have 4-year follow-ups on some of these guys, and that just flattens. So that downward trend you see, that red bar, those are the HOPE guys, it collapses, and it continues to collapse all the way to 4 years out. This is the number. Now, look at this. Look how beautiful and elegant this is as a behavioral triage model. When brought into court and told with credibility that you will be sanctioned every time you mess up, look at this. Now, this is a high-risk group. They were violating all the time. 61% of them never tested positive again. That is an impressive number. Look at the triage. You see, now we know who can do it on their own, which means we only have to not even care about the other 40% who couldn't when facing a consistent sanction. So 20% of them tried Judge Arm and his colleagues. They said, okay, let's see if they really mean it. So they peed dirty once. And look at that. It just keeps collapsing. 2, 3, 4, 5. We have very few of them going on into the right-hand tail, the multiple drug users. Now, what drug dirty tests? Notice what they can do now. They can take the 3, 4, 5, and 6 repeat dirties and whisk them all away to good quality treatment, because they're not spending it on that big bar on the front end. They're spending all their treatment resources on those who really need it. And that's what we've seen. The HOPE offenders who fail the dirty drug tests are being sent off to very impressive quality care in Hawaii. It often involves multiple years of residential care, because their treatment resources can do it. It would have been impossible without this type of triage. Missed appointments, we see the same kinds of reductions. They come into line. We see by 6 months follow-up, only 1% are missing their appointments. Taking it out over time, it just collapses to, I think by a year, we're at 0.003 are missing. Same thing in terms of the number of missed appointments. 70% of them never missed an appointment. This was a group that never showed up. Often didn't show up. 70% of them never missed once they knew we meant business or they meant business. If there's an economist in the room, I can essentially go home now. This is revocation rates. We have a 3-to-1 revocation rate against, you get the idea. Control group, comparison groups are being revoked at 3 times the rate than the HOPE group. This has huge implications for prison costs. Here's the difference in incarceration. This is the number of days incarcerated. The bottom bar, this is fascinating. The bottom bar in that ugly anemic color, those tiny little bars at the bottom, those are jail stays. I would absolutely a priori going into this, having to decide how to test this hypothesis, I would have expected to test a one-sided hypothesis in favor of HOPE, that HOPE would have spent more time in jail, because they get sanctioned all the time. They go if they mess up. Look at that. The HOPE offenders actually have a slightly lower number of days in jail over the course of the study. The reason is, when they go to jail, they're going for a couple of days at a time. When the control group or comparison group are going away to jail, they're going for 6 months, 365 days. You can have a lot of HOPE guys spending short stints in jail for every one of the comparison group that's going for the longer haul. The other nice thing is we haven't separated them from their communities for very long. We haven't disrupted their work. So essentially, there's no statistical significance in the number of jail days between the two groups. So essentially, HOPE is jail neutral. Look at the prison bar. We find that it's